Cambridge 105.
I quite like baked apples in the winter.
There's no fancy pants stuff in there. It's just proper English pork and it's lovely.
It's just a real sort of hubbub of stuff happening.
Do you remember I bought some chickens?
That's right.
That's when we started to sell eggs.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's where it really started.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah.
Why did you become a butcher?
It was fun. I was at a friend's house once and I was helping her dad cut up a bit of venison. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I just knew I enjoyed it. Now I can do it properly.
We don't stint on the smoked salmon.
Well,
I don't.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, an hour of Cambridge's food and drink. And thanks to Ian Dayborn for the last 2 hours as usual. I'm Matt Bentman, and since Alan Alder is away on holiday, we've got Emma O'Hanlon from Emmanuel College here in the studio.
Thank you, Matt. Today we say goodbye to Clowns, a Cambridge food institution that's been here for 30 years. We hear from Estefania Led-Ramos with a cooling tapas and cocktail, and from Tina Roach, who'll be talking about a kitchen gadget.
Louise Wilson has been to Restaurant 22 in Chesterton Road, which has been shortlisted for a rather prestigious award. And we can't ignore the fact that Brexit negotiations began this week. But what does that mean for Cambridge's food and drink independence? What do they make of it? Well, we asked them.
And we'll round off the programme with the latest food and drink news from the city.
Earlier this month saw the closure of the long-running Clowns Cafe. It was run by the Salkella family on King Street. Now, it had its set of regulars, plenty of students, who are often referred to as the kids of Clowns. It had plenty of live music, and the food was lauded. I met someone. They'd been going there for about 7 years. They'd always ordered the beef or the spinach lasagna, and they loved it so much that they never got around to checking the rest of the menu. There was a huge amount of affection for Clowns Cafe. They had a big leaving party as well, which was covered in the local media. And now this is ours, well, this isn't so much of a feature, this is more of a tribute to a really lovely place in Cambridge.
Cambridge, I remember when I got here, it was just a few business. It was Clowns open until midnight and Savino's open until 11.
I used to work in the Champion of the Thames, come in Clowns every morning for a coffee and, well, Jen would often try and slip a Sambuca in my morning espresso.
Feeling for me is just being in my village in the cafe in the evening. You just need to have the old man here having their beers and talking about football and screaming at each other.
Oh, remember the ice creams Jenny always used to give you?
Yeah.
Even if the mum said no, every child left with an ice cream.
Yes.
I mean a gelati, sorry, gelati.
It's kind of funny that it actually exists like this in Cambridge.
We have to go there, we have to go there.
And maybe you couldn't afford it, but it didn't matter.
We used to have kids going in there and drawing pictures of clowns and the walls would be absolutely covered in all these little clown drawings that people had done. And that was always lovely.
They just do their own thing with their strange clown theme, which I find very eccentric.
The girls said, hello girls, you're going to have lasagna. It's amazing, they remember you.
You feel welcome every time.
I like it, I like that they're doing it, yeah.
And also I've never had better lasagna and gnocchi in my life.
Aperitivo!
And it feels like a piece of Italy in Cambridge.
Clowns is a cafe named after Patriarch Raffaele's love of clowns and the Italian opera Pagliacci. His daughters, Jenny and Michaela.
Me and Michaela, we love so much each other.
But I do love her, really, even if she's very bossy.
No, like, anymore.
She's turned into my dad. She had to, I think. She had no choice.
A little bit bossy.
I first met you 2 years ago, and there were plenty of people then who were talking about your father and had so many memories, good memories, especially of his singing.
Oh,
yes, the tenor, as they called him, you know, with his tenor voice. I think some of the ladies, they used to go in especially for that. It's like, wow, you know, this handsome Italian man serenading me, cappuccino and good food. What more do you want from life?
But he also sang to forget problems and bills. then he used to sing more. So if he didn't sing, there was something wrong with him.
When you described your dad opening Clowns, you said hobby, not job. He loved that place.
Indeed, yes.
It was his life. Clowns was, it still is his life, even if it's gone.
I'll tell you this funny story. I think my mum will be a bit upset. So dad used to open 7:30 in the morning. And then dinner time, my mum used to call him. And then to have a break of the headache from my mother, he used to escape to Clown to make tiramisu at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Starting from Monday till the end of the week, it was like a cheering up to go and see my dad. He would sing to them, make them coffee, you know, have chats.
And he used to get Italian, Spanish, English. They used to work in a college, Pembroke, St. John's. They knew he was there, so they'll go and have a beer, Vecchia Romagna. And you know, he just come home 3-4 o'clock in the morning. But I've always been his left arm, even if he only told me a few weeks ago, because he's very proud of me.
Clowns had a big send-off on Friday night. You may have read about it in the Cambridge News or seen the photos on social media.
I'm dreaming of a street party, but I'm going with the flow because I don't like to plan. In Italian, we say improvisate.
It turned into one big party.
You know, when I came along here tonight, I thought it was going to be something kind of foolishly quite quiet, so I was really flabbergasted to see a huge pile of people and an outdoor concert. It's fantastic.
That day, everything was happening like a film, and then you rewind and you see Tom and Ari, they were playing like they used to do, Unplugged.
Well, I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do ya?
So they were playing the guitar outside, lovely guy, I thank you so much.
Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
It's a testament to how many people love the two of these and their dad.
We're always happy to come here.
There are people that 10 years ago would come in every single day, and they're here tonight, which is just amazing.
This is just a little piece of Italy right here in the heart of Cambridge, which I love.
This is community.
The family are having Clowns, I'll never forget.
Well, your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, and her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you.
This is it for Clowns.
She tied you to her kitchen chair, and she broke your throne, and she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew a hallelujah. 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 She's got the right idea. Hallelujah.
They'll be sorely missed.
Hallelujah.
I could get very emotional, but I want to enjoy this and celebrate what Clowns has meant to us.
Well, baby, I've been here before. I've seen these halls and I've walked these floors. I used to live alone before I knew ya.
Because it's not a business.
And I've seen your flag on the marble arch, but love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah.
This is a family.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
So I worked at Clowns for about 6 years. Between Raf, Jenny and Michaela, they were everything I needed in another family. It was all about living for food, and I couldn't have asked for anything else.
Well, there was a time when you let me know what's really going on below, but you don't really do that for me, do ya?
The comfort they've given to people.
But remember when I moved in, you and the Holy Dove was moving too, and every breath we drew is hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Seeing that, how much care people and having clowns, you know, right till the end. You appreciate it. It's like a blessing.
Thank you, guys.
Someone do a video, please. I love you guys. I'll never forget. Thank you for all the love and caring. Forever Clown. Love you guys.
Jenny, before you disappear, actually, now that we've got the lady herself, we can actually say thank you properly. You know, we've been coming to Clowns for a few years now and had some absolutely epic times in this venue. It's been no surprise, it's been because of these guys, you know. They treat their customers like guests at their house. And the one thing you can't buy is a kind heart. There's been times I've gone into Clowns, I'm sure many people can relate, feeling like shit, and I've left with an ear-to-ear grin because of the love these guys have showed me. So Jenny and the Sorcella family, you guys should be incredibly proud of the legacy that you have created over the last 30 years. And we are truly grateful to have been a part of it. So to Clowns, guys!
We're just standing out here as a crowd of hundreds are getting their photo taken outside of Clowns.
Yeah, I'm surprised the Rozzers haven't come down and closed the party. But it's a local thing, so I don't think they would.
All of the trucks and taxis and cars are getting nicely cheesed off with us.
We expected that a lot of people were going to come, but that was just incredible. I really felt the 30 years of love.
I couldn't even get into Clowns. All three floors were heaving.
Even.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I feel like I haven't left Clowns. It was thanks to our dad that he sacrificed his life to bring us here, you know, because without that, we wouldn't have been where we are now.
Dad made me like him, strong, like a rock. Yeah. I'm not crumbling yet. But you know, darling, I'm jobless. I live in La Dolce Vita. But in my house, he feels like Clowns because I got in the sitting room, the office, and in the dining room, there's all the pictures of Clowns.
So with that in mind, I'm going to go up next with a song that I've always enjoyed playing at Clowns because it's always one that people end up singing along to, so don't let me down.
On the day that I was married, because it was very close by, I came in, had a coffee with the girls, Jenny and Mickey, had a latte, and went back and got married.
Yeah, they're great characters throughout King Street, throughout Cambridge.
I'm going to miss my Aperol spritzers, let's put it that way. And the aperitivos. And my coffee. And it's the only reason I come into Cambridge.
Thank you to my father. He's our rock, our hero.
But it has a special charm of authenticity, I would say.
We'll be looking out and thinking of the happy times we enjoyed here in the centre of Cambridge.
I was going to clean my room, but then I got high. Was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. And so my room is still messed up, and I know why. Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high.
Like in Italian style.
Now I was gonna go to class, but then I got high.
You'll never see another cafe like this in Cambridge, as far as I'm concerned. But then I got
high. There's nowhere else like it, really.
Very sad to see Clowns go. It's an amazing place.
And it has a special charm.
Yeah, I'm going to really miss it.
The girls are amazing, the food is amazing, and as I said, it's so beautiful, the portions are beautiful.
Thank you for always giving me a second home. I order someone to come, like, almost irrelevant of the time of day or night. Even, like, my fairy godmothers and father in Raph's case. So thank you for everything.
Incredible. You know, there's no words to express that love.
Once you're under that roof, you're all there as a team, and that's something very, very special. You can't coach that kind of thing.
I was gonna go to share my child support, but then I got high.
a little secret your grandmother put there in making more special, more creamy. And this is the place where you get it.
Thank you, Matt, for being close to us as well all this time. You know, taking your time to come and record us and all our customers.
Thank you very much.
And Jamie Oliver, you don't put chorizo in paella.
But you know, it feels, you know, it's kind of, I haven't left yet. But you know, it's kind of still emotion, that still the soul of clown is breathing in King Street, is around, you know? Yeah.
Just wanted to say thank you very much for so many coffees, good moments. The most of it is for your warmth. All the family have a big heart and always welcome. Stuart and me is like... Thank you.
And that was Clowns. And they closed for a positive reason, as Jenny and Michaela, they want to spend time looking after their father, Rafa, who, in their words, he's been so fit and well for the longest time, and then he got hit with everything at once.
Jenny said they invited their dad to come and see the place one last time. He created Clowns, it was his place. He said he always wanted to remember the cafe as it was, filled with all the happy faces and the sad faces that he could fix with a song.
Yeah, and by the way, the singer that you heard in that feature was one of their regulars, Harry Beasley. He did a stunning rendition of Hallelujah, the best I've heard outside of Jeff Buckley, I'd say. You can find more of his music on his Facebook page, Harry Beasley Music, and that's Harry with an I.
So, goodbye to Clowns Cafe, and thank you to the Zaukella family for 3 decades of coffee and Italian spirit.
Every fortnight, Bums on Seats brings debate and discussion on the latest movie releases. From blockbusters to art house, our panel of reviewers are passionate about film.
There's one thing in common, and that's that I think they're all absolutely brilliant.
Well, you can see the ending by watching the trailer, because I was surprised they show it in the trailer.
You wouldn't know it was the ending if you hadn't just said it.
And we'll agree to disagree.
No, I don't agree.
Hosted by Toby Miller.
We take the latest cinema releases for a dance and a drink and report back on which ones have turned our eye and captured our heart, and which ones will be blanking in the street if we happen to pass them.
Join the team. Alternate Saturdays at 12 noon on Community Radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
Restaurant 22 is a small family-run restaurant here in Cambridge and was recently nominated in the Best Restaurant in Britain Awards. Cambridge 105's Louise Wilson went along to speak to owner and manager Armando Tommaso and his head chef, Chris Kipping, to find out how they got on and more about the restaurant itself.
I'm now sitting in Restaurant 22, which is widely regarded as one of the best restaurants in Cambridge, independently and privately owned by Armando and Sharon Tommaso. Armando joins me now and talking about being one of the best. Armando, you were recently nominated and shortlisted for British Restaurant of the Year 2017. Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
So tell us more about that then.
Well, basically we got nomination alongside other restaurants. Yeah, we got nominated and we just went to pick up the award last night.
Yeah, talking about that, there are a few other Cambridge restaurants nominated, like the Oak Bistro, Aromi, Alimentum and Varsity Restaurant, to name but a few. But there were also some of the big hitters, let's say, also nominated, you know, such as Gordon Ramsay of Chelsea and all the rest of it. So that must have been a huge boost to be kind of put up alongside these guys.
Yeah, you know, it's a big achievement just to sort of just be there and sort of stay, you know, be part of that and to sort of share the stage with the big names. And, you know, I think what's very important, and, you know, us as an independent restaurant against those, behind these people is always a consortium of other people. You know, they've built their name up, they've built a brand up, and what they're doing. So to be, you know, even just be sort of nominated against those is quite a big achievement.
So who actually does the nominating?
Nominating was put forward to our customers. So basically customers went online and they voted online, yeah.
And who judges it?
It was the British Restaurant Awards.
Okay, so... was it always part of the plan to collect awards and accolades, or was it more about channeling a passion to create great food and a great atmosphere for people to dine in.
Yeah, I think it's the latter of the two, you know, to get recognition for what we do, and we sort of, when things come along, they sort of come along.
And does that add pressure, or does that spur you on, the recognition?
It does. It does spur. It does. Yeah. It does sort of spur you on personally, just sort of almost, you know, sort of re-energises you, and you just sort of got to look forward and how we can improve on what we're doing.
And actually, talking about that, the restaurant has been established now for 30 years. Has it always been yours?
Since 1980, so you have 37 years.
Wow, yeah. So
37 years. I purchased a property in September 2007, so I'm coming up to my 10-year anniversary. So I'm the fifth proprietor.
Right.
Yeah.
Why Cambridge? What kind of drew you in? Have you got a local connection?
Yeah, no, I was just brought up around the corner.
Oh, right,
I just live around the corner, but, you know, I don't live in Cambridge anymore.
What established your passion in food? Did you grow up in a household, or was it out of necessity, or...?
Both, really.
Yeah.
My mother's a good cook there, and it's just something I just wanted to do. And I worked a lot in universities.
Yeah.
Just as a part-time job, really.
Yeah.
And then I got to a point of leaving school, and I had to decide what I want to do career-wise. I had a passion for food.
And I think that's the thing, you have to, really, because it's not an easy business to be in, is it, really?
No, not at all. You've just got to take each day as it comes, iron out any problems that are in front of you, as well as trying to improve and move forward, and that's sometimes the hardest bit, being an independent.
Yeah. Joining us as well is Chris Kipping, who is the head chef, and you change your menus on a monthly basis according to what's in season. So is that something that you do collaboratively, or something that you kind of run with yourself?
We try to get the whole sort of team involved, you know, it's good for them and their minds to keep them active, so that everyone sort of puts their ideas together, and then I will put the menu together, and if I feel that they're fit in with the month's menu, then yeah, we'll maybe put them on. Or
do you have a particular style, or do you just kind of, I don't know, play with things?
We try to keep it European, really. There's quite a big Italian influence, but a British influence as well, so.
And do you find working with what's in season a challenge, or do you relish that idea of just going out, seeing what's there, and then bring it back and having a play around with it?
It is a challenge, obviously not this time of year, because this is, you know, the chef's
abundant
dream this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything. But you do get certain months where there isn't the stuff, but then maybe there's not the veg around, but it might be the game season. So, yeah, we may have to find things slightly out of season, but there's always meat or game or fish, or, you know, there's in season.
Things you can do.
Yeah.
Have you got a particular favourite season that you like?
I quite like autumn.
That seems to be a trend, actually, amongst chefs. I often hear that that's kind of their favourite time of the year, because, like you say, you get all the things like game and root vegetables coming
more
through
home,
at that point. Yeah, home cooking.
More sort of homely.
That's
think,
it.
Well, you know,
and actually, that fits nicely with the intimacy of your restaurant, presumably, as well, because it is, you know, we are sitting here, and it is, how many do you seat here?
The main restaurant, up to 26, and we've got a private dining room upstairs also, and that's up to 14, but 14 is the absolute maximum. So for room 10 to 12
really.
is a nice, comfortable number upstairs in the private room. Down here, I'm 26 maximum, but generally sort of 22.
Yeah, and it's a lovely intimate setting, really, and it's beautiful. You've got flowers, and you've got, what do you call those? A dresser, that's it, bottles on it and things like that. And it's a lovely, lovely setting, that I think, like Victorian sort of decor, isn't it?
It's a Victorian house, converted, I'd say 1980. Used to be student digs in the time.
The customers that come and come back again like the fact that we change every month, you know, and it's nice looking, but at the same time it's not over fussy, or, you know, it's for your average person. It's not pretentious, or, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
You
have a set menu that people choose from. You have a set menu, so it's not like a massive choice, and actually I think in lots of ways that shows the degree of care that goes into each individual dish.
Yeah,
is that
something you focus on?
On
our set menu, we don't have the fact that we give little velouté to start and a selection of breads and
so there
like
are
that,
extras,
you know. Yeah,
but it is
put in it. Yeah, but it's I think for if people do come in, yeah, obviously if you eat every week or so and so, which doesn't happen, but I think the people that come every month, it's changed, so there's always something that they'll enjoy. And
And do people just come in off the street, or do they have to book in advance?
No, people have to book in advance.
Yeah.
The percentage of walk-ins, we call them.
Yeah.
1%, not even that.
Yeah.
Not even that. You know, a huge core of the business is based with locals. So it's, you know, it's a neighbourhood, yeah, neighbourhood restaurant, as you like. And then obviously from that, and then universities, anything which is associated with universities, and Addbrookes and doctors, and, you know, and obviously Cambridge is a very influential area. Mm. So yeah, but people generally book. Certainly for weekends, definitely.
And finally, what's next for Restaurant 22? You did win Best in Cambridge. Is that something you're going to kind of just keep striving for, or getting better in terms of awards and accolades? Or is it just kind of keep doing, you know, you're doing the right thing, you know, you're on the right track, and yeah, keep
think,
doing that?
We carry on doing what we are. I mean, we work to the best of our ability anyway. Yeah. So it's, you know, we've got a good team of guys in the kitchen, in front of the house. So it's, we carry on as it is. Yeah, there's a little bit more pressure now because people come in and, yeah, you know,
expect a certain.
Yeah, but we carry on doing what we're doing, and that's that. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to us about it. Well, I wish you all the best in the future.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
For your time. Thank you.
And that was Cambridge 105 Radio's Louise Wilson there, speaking to Armando Tommaso, owner of Restaurant 22, and his head chef, Chris Kipping. And they won Best Restaurant in Cambridge, having been put forward by faithful customers in the nominations.
You're listening to Cambridge 105 Radio. This week saw the beginning of the Brexit negotiations. We'll keep our eyes open for how they proceed and how Brexit might affect the food and drink scene here in Cambridge. Here's an initial view from Jack Van Prague of Jack's Gelato, fishmonger Ben Roberts from the Saturday Morning Fish Van in Grantchester Street, Hans Schweitzer from Cotto, and Sam Owens from Thirsty in Chesterton Road.
I've seen the future, it's not real. Will Brexit affect your business?
It will, and it has. Yeah, you know, certainly our costs have gone up. You know, pretty much every one of our suppliers have put up their prices considerably, and that's affected us. We've managed to resist for now, and we've kept the same prices as we had last year and the year before that. Yeah, and there are, you know, obviously numerous other effects, and there'll be ripple effects from other things.
Right, so there's no good news from it?
No, not that I can see. Not, no. European skies, European desires,
European roads, European homes. I was a Remain, mainly because I think we're better off in than out, and I think we've got a lot, we import a lot more fish. I know with the way the pound is at the minute, the exports are a lot better, but we don't export an awful lot of fish to Europe. But a lot of the fishermen seem to think we'll be better off out of the coming fisheries policy and, you know, sailing our own course. But I don't know where we're going to get the fishermen or the boats from to catch more than we do.
So if we're importing a lot of fish, then that must be getting more expensive because of the fall in the pound.
It is. We've not noticed it yet because they're soaking up the costs. But there will come a time, if it stays as it is, that it'll go up.
Once we have left the European Union, will we not have the rights to fish solely round our shores and nobody else can
yeah,
have a go?
I think that's what a lot of the fishermen are expecting to happen. I can't see it myself. I can't see as being able to tell the rest of Europe this is ours now, because the common fisheries policy has been on the go for 40 years. How we turn around and say, out of Brexit, we're having it all, we'll just sell it to you, I don't think anyone's going to go a lot on that. So as part of the negotiation, I think it'll stay as is, as one of the you know, conditions of leaving Europe.
If it was the case that we managed to get the... How much of the fishing industry would be able to take advantage of that? Because we need to expand the fleet, presumably.
Yes. I mean, the common fisheries policy has worked from the fishing fleet that caught fish in the North Sea and the South coast of England in the 70s, and the majority of it was caught, the fish that was used in the UK was caught from Iceland waters.
Right.
So none of the boats that were in the deep water vessels from Grimsby and Hull and all of the northern fleet, which have just about disappeared, was taken into account, which means if we came to sit to it and said we're going to have all of this fishing is going to be ours, we haven't got the boats, we haven't got the men, we haven't got the experience of fishing anymore, because 40 years of not fishing has left us without a fleet. You know, the South Coast boats have got quite a lot of boats, but they're not big boats, you know, they're smaller little inshore vessels, the majority of them. You know, it may be 30, 40 years, if it carries on with it's all our fish and our boats, we might have an industry that we had in the 70s.
Yeah.
But you know, there's so many buts and ifs and things that happen in a minute.
It's not going to happen overnight.
It's just not going to happen overnight. No.
Will Brexit affect you in any way, do you think? I mean, either through sourcing food or through custom?
You see, Brexit, you know, for the normal functions and for the staff, I sometimes used to buy lamb from New Zealand, and this has disappeared. And I think one of my, one of the reasons is because of the currency exchange. The pound has dropped so much that we probably don't import that much lamb anymore. So we use local lamb, which is much more expensive, which I then can't afford for that particular purpose. I'm happy to pay any price for our fine dining. So there are a couple of little areas where you can see it changing. You know, but no one knows the full effect of it.
What about the effect on staff? Will you get?
I can't really sort of judge that at the moment because we're fully staffed. And you know, if you have a really good quality restaurant, you always attract good staff to work with you. Or in my case, my emphasis is very much on training young people. You know, I have my two main players here in the kitchen are from my old Koto. I trained them from scratch, and this is. Joseph and Seb, they're absolutely amazing. They do all the hot food, saucy side for us. And so I don't have any problems with that at the moment with staffing. Mm-hmm. European dreams, European schools. Europa, geht
durch mich. Europa, geht durch mich. At Thirsty, we sell a lot of wines which we bring in from the continent, from France, Italy, from Germany, Austria. Since the pound dropped 15%+ last June, the cost, of course, of bringing those into the country has got more expensive, simply because we have to buy those things in euros and our pounds are now worth 15% less. The cost of fuel as well, which a lot of people don't take into account, is denominated in dollars. So again, sterling fell even more against the dollar than against the euro. Every time that you transport anything, be it drinks, be it ice cream, be it whatever it is, that's got more expensive, particularly the drinks industry. There is a system across the European Union whereby if you move drinks from one country to another, you fill in common forms. And it makes the formalities, the paperwork, moving alcohol relatively straightforward. I know I have a business in France. We sell in the ski resorts of France, of Italy, of Austria, and of Switzerland. And I know when I'm selling from my base in France into Switzerland, which of course is outside the European Union, the paperwork and the time and the cost is higher than it is when I sell within France and when I sell out of France into Austria, into Italy, or selling across into the UK. So there's an additional cost that will come into play if we do leave the European Union in terms of increased paperwork, increased time to actually move the drinks across from the continent. That ultimately will end up being passed on to the customer. Another point that affects us is that we, as many businesses, we employ people from all over the continent, all over the world, as well as British employees. I don't want to find myself restricted in terms of who I'm allowed to employ, or if we have fewer people coming here to work, which, again, with the immigration situation and proposed limits and restrictions, and what will be the rights of the people that I've got, who I've invested in my team from Slovakia or from Poland or from France, what will be their rights if we leave the European Union? I don't know. These are key members of our team, and I don't enjoy insecurity and uncertainty of not knowing what might be in store for them. Europa.
They were the views on Brexit of Jack Van Prague, Ben Roberts, Hans Schweitzer and Sam Owens. We'll return to the subject from time to time.
Yeah, so what's the general view of Brexit amongst your fellow students, Anima?
Well, I think students in general are very attached to the idea of being part of Europe. And we've kind of grown up with the idea that we would be able to move around for work. And I think it's been a shock to a lot of people to have that suddenly taken away from them.
Yes.
Especially those who want to work in academia.
And that music signals time for the latest food tweets from the city, so we're going to take this in turn. George Heffer from George's Bakery, we interviewed him last year. He will be exhibiting new cake designs at Ely Farmers Market on Sunday, and the one that caught my eye, strawberry mint and sparkling wine. And the best thing about it was he supplied this video that really shows it off. It is overloaded with the plumpest strawberries, just gorgeous.
Afternoon teas are offering herby scrambled eggs on sourdough toast with prosciutto and homemade cherry tomato relish today.
And Bridges Cambridge, they're just ecstatic about it being a lovely sunny Saturday. Come and get a seat with us and watch the world go by, they say.
And finally, Martin Kemp takes up his Sunday residency at Hot Numbers tomorrow, playing the finest in jazz from 3 p.m.
Now, it's been a little while, but we make a welcome return to the Cambridge Cookery Bistro and Cafe just off Hills Road to catch up with Tina Roche for one of her kitchen gadget reviews. Okay, now this is nice because you're introducing us to a tool that I've been using all my life. I never knew its official name.
Well, I, as a Swede, would refer to it as a cheese slicer or osthyvel, which is a funny name, isn't it? But to me, that is something that wasn't here. I've lived here for a long time, 30 years, and it didn't exist then. But I think the IKEA effect, you know, has taken over, and more people would recognise this as something they have seen, because I think you're a bit unusual. And it might have been introduced, I think, to you. Did you say you had a Swedish lodger or?
Yes, I did, back in the early to mid 80s, I think. So I presume that's probably my earliest memory of those things as well. And I live and die by them. I never move house, I never without having one of those. They're vital.
They're vital, I agree. They're absolutely vital kitchen tools. And I think it's because of how Scandinavians eat bread and toppings. So rather than a sandwich, most of it is an open sandwich of some sort, you know, one slice of rye bread or one slice of whatever bread you're using. And so you don't want chunks of cheese. You're not necessarily after cutting hard cheese, we're talking now, not, you know, not brie and soft cheeses. You're not after cutting it with a knife to get a sort of thick wedge as you would if you were eating a cheese platter. You're after a fairly thin, long slice that you can sort of shave off and put on top of your bread. So this would be essential for breakfast or snack time. And we have a lot of, you know, mature nutty cheeses, a bit like cheddar, but often a little bit more nutty and sweet almost in flavor, and they would definitely require one of these. But on top of that, if you want to thinly slice things like cucumber, you know, you want to do ribbons or courgette or even carrots, I think it's easier to use one of these because they're sort of sturdy, aren't they?
Yes.
Compared to, say, a swivel vegetable peeler, which can be quite tricky if you wanted to use it on vegetables. Equally, much safer to use than the much feared mandolin, which is a kitchen tool, which is essentially an angled razor blade set atop something that looks like a small washboard. And it does often result in horrendous accidents. So this is a safe and really practical tool, I think, for shaving anything really, from hard cheese to vegetables.
Yes, yeah. Although I suppose it's not 100% safe, because you could take a lop of your skin off with it as well.
You could, but I think because of how it's that is angled down to the whatever it is you're cutting, whereas the mandolin is held at an angle, so pretty much like a washboard, and it's much, much easier to cut yourself. And when you do, it's absolutely horrific. And most chefs are impatient with the safety guard that they come with. That's a sort of a little plastic shield, if you like, with teeth in, that you then put on your piece of carrot or whatever it is you're shaving. The results are beautiful because you get wafer thin slices of carrot, courgette or radishes or whatever it is. But as you get towards the end of that, it's very tempting to think, oh, I'll just hold on to it with my fingernails. And that is lethal.
You know, I wish I could put one of these in the kitchen drawer of every house in the city. I just think they're indispensable. This one in particular, I'm really... Can I just hold it?
That is stainless steel. As you say, it's unusually lovely. You could certainly go to that big blue and yellow warehouse and get one probably for about £1, which would be not quite as lovely as this, but still very good and often lasts almost a lifetime.
Yes.
Once you bought one, they don't really break. That's the other amazing thing. You know, you might only have one or two in your entire life.
Exactly. That's why I've got the same one that we've had for 30 years.
Such a useful tool, isn't it? It's great to meet somebody who has, you know, appreciated it and seen the light as a way forward.
I'm so familiar with using it that I've had various lodgers who've, you know, come and live with me, and they've done, say, cheese on toast. And I've watched them slice colossal chunks and put that onto the toast and under the grill, and it makes my heart seize, you know, because this thing slices perfectly every time. There's a little technique to it, but once you know it, after a couple of slices, you're there. It's there for life.
Absolutely, it's perfect. It slices perfectly every time, and perfect is again if you're making homemade pizza, say, and you want to slice any time when you want thinly sliced anything, almost. As I say, it is a cheese slicer, but as I said, the vegetables, but also things like pear, and there's so many things where I would just automatically reach for this one and think, yeah. Oh yes, I know the tool for this.
The Ersthervel, the cheese slicer, in other words, and I love it. I did a quick web search. It says it was created by a carpenter called Thor Bjorklund in 1925, who was annoyed that he couldn't get uniformly thin cheese slices with a normal knife. Now, his design, it was perfect, and it's stayed that way ever since. And it's probably, like Tina says, one of the few kitchen tools that could last you a lifetime. I never have the cheese without an Ersthervel, yeah?
Yeah.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
Now, on Wednesday, we had the hottest day for 43 years, and that heat had been oppressive for days before. So, sweating like a pig, I paid a visit to the exceptionally cool and the exceptionally Spanish Estefania Led Ramos of Querico Tapas, the premier Spanish catering company in Cambridge. Now, she knows her stuff when it comes to creating cooling dishes and drinks to have in the hot summer sun. I'm here with Estefania Led Ramos of Querico Tapas.
Hello.
To talk about a recipe.
A recipe that in Spain is very popular to beat the heat like these days that we are having in Cambridge.
Perfect.
Is a gazpacho, that's a tomato cold soup, very popular in Andalusia, in the south of Spain. Hmm.
So what's all this gazpacho soup business? What's it all about?
Let's just start with the ingredients for six people, mm-hmm. six glasses. So we need a kilo of ripe tomatoes, 75 grams of green pepper, 180 grams of cucumber, 2 cloves of garlic, 150 milliliters of extra virgin olive oil, 50 milliliters of Jerez vinegar. Oh, God. Water and a pinch of salt. I think that you can use any other vinegar if you like it, but Jerez vinegar is not so strong like red wine vinegar. Mm-hmm. So we want a punch at the end of the gazpacho, but no very pasty.
Not an acidic.
Yes, no, so it's just a little bit to refresh. And also because we have to blend all the ingredients. So with the extra virgin olive oil and the vinegar, you make like an emulsion with all the vegetables.
I see.
That's it. It's a really simple recipe and you don't need too much time, but I always try to cook with care, looking after each ingredient, and then you have a great result.
Gazpacho soup. It was the greatest night of my life.
So first you have to peel the tomatoes. To do that, I prefer to blanch them. So make a superficial cross at the bottom of the tomatoes, trying to cut just the skin.
Yes.
And in a deep pot, pour water and bring to boil. Prepare a bowl with cold water and some ice. When the water is boiling, just put the tomatoes in for 1 minute. Mm-hmm. Then transfer them quickly to this bowl with ice. Keep them for a few minutes until they cool down. So with that, we help the tomato separate the skin from the flesh and to keep the red color, chop them and put them in a blender. With that, we have the first ingredient ready and we have to wash, seed and chop the green peppers as well the cucumbers and put all the ingredients together in the blender until you have really thick sauce. Season that with a little bit of salt, add the vinegar, 2 cloves of garlic. And at the same time that you are blending that, pour slowly the extra virgin olive oil. And you will see that the color turns a little bit orange instead of dark red, but the flavor and texture is completely different because we are creating an emulsion with the extra virgin olive oil. Uh-huh. And that's it. If it's too thick, just add a little bit of water until you get the texture you like it. I don't like really runny, but not very thick. So you have to be able to drink it, but not just have like a juice of tomato. Keep it in the fridge for a couple of hours until it's cold and serve in really nice glasses. If it's transparent, it's better because you can see the color. And normally what we do is dress the gazpacho with fried serrano ham, croutons, a boiled egg in small pieces, sprinkle on top. So you can eat the gazpacho at the same time that you are eating this garnish. And it's really delicious.
I didn't know gazpacho soup was meant to be served cold. I called over the chef and I told him to take it away and bring it back hot. I never ate at the captain's table again. That was the end of my career.
Do you tend to serve a lot of this with Greco tapas as well?
In summer, yes.
Yeah.
I like to use seasonal dishes and seasonal ingredients. It's really refreshing, full of vitamins, quite filling. So it's a perfect starter for a dinner.
Recent listeners to Flavour may not know that Estefania has long since been a contributor to our programme. Recently, I caught up with you. I say recently, I think it was last year, because you also do tapa around, yes, around the city.
Yes, I mean, I not only catering private or corporate events, I organise as well pop-ups in Cambridge and surround. But one place that I really enjoy working there is Cambridge Wine Merchant. So every other month, more or less, we have a wine tasting with tapas from different regions from Spain. Mm. So it's great fun for them and for me, because I hope for my customers as well, because they are coming back and always asking for the next date, because every time is something different. Different wines and different dishes.
If only just once they'd said gazpacho soup is served cold, I could have been an admiral by now.
Now, you said that the gazpacho soup originates from Andalusia.
Yes. There was a sort of similar cold soup in Al-Andalus in the Middle Ages, but it was made with water, bread, vinegar and olive oil, making a cold soup. It wasn't until the 19th century when the tomato was incorporated in the recipe gazpacho. Basically, it's a recipe using the ingredients that people had in their allotments in summer, that is cucumber, pepper, and tomatoes. And it's cold because it's really hot area. Yeah. There are different versions of gazpacho, and you can find in Andalusia, if you go to Cordoba, the traditional one is salmorejo with bread, and it's thicker. You have another one that is ajo blanco, white garlic. It is bread, almonds, garlic and water, and pinch of salt and olive oil as well.
That sounds very interesting. Yeah. I've not heard of that one before.
But it's probably an unexpected flavour to have a soup with almonds and garlic. It's really, really delicious. And if you think of the ingredients in this recipe, we have cucumber that basically is water.
Yeah.
And it's really refreshing, even if you have some cucumber like sticks in it with a dipping sauce. It's a source of vitamins. It's a really healthy dish with ingredients that refresh your body when it's really, really hot.
Mm.
Yeah.
The Andalusia region is the southern region of Spain.
They have a great food industry, like Almeria, where they produce most of the vegetables for the rest of Europe. The olive oil, they have a great industry and they are the best in the world.
Yes, I've heard this as well. They produce more than Italy.
Yeah.
There's so much fruit and veg grown in Andalusia.
Yeah, olive trees were always there in Andalusia. It's, you know, it's like the home of these products. And they sell to Italy.
Yes.
And it's something controversial. Probably we should learn how to market better our product.
So, a suitable drink to go with this?
Well, the perfect drink for a gazpacho, it will be dry sherry, a manzanilla or a fino, for example. But as it's really hot these days, even if you have the dry sherry in the fridge and it's cold, it could be too much for the alcohol level that it has. So I recommend you to make a beautiful cocktail that is rebujito, a sort of manzanilla or fino, 7-Up or Sprite, and a lot of ice, and decorate with rebujito.
Rebujito.
Perfecto.
Hey. Let's go for another drink. Super.
Can Many thanks to Estefania Led Ramos, who today is a guest chef at the Cambridge Cookery Bistro and Cafe on Hills Road.
Yeah, Spain on your plate, not literally, of course, is the name of her breakfast and lunch, which is running right now until 3 p.m, featuring Spanish omelettes and croquetas. Anna stated in that feature she also collaborates with the Cambridge wine merchants on Cherry Hinton Road, as long-time listeners should well know. She's co-hosting a wine and tapa event next Wednesday evening about food and wine from Catalonia and Valencia, the Mediterranean coast linked to the summer and the sea.
So that's five tapas from the east coast of Spain, along with five matched wines. Tickets are £32.50 and it'll be on June 28th. These events are very popular, so it's definitely worth booking your place. And you can do that by calling the wine merchants on Cambridge 214 548.
And that music says that it's time for us to move on to the food and drink news now. So take it away, Emma.
Beginning with jobs. The Three Horseshoes in Madingley need waiting and bar staff. The pay is £6 to £8 per hour, and there will be evening, weekend and split shifts. Give James or Jazz a ring on 01954 210 221.
The Senate in St Mary's Passage, that's between the Market Square and King's Parade, also require permanent waiting and bar staff. Cambridge regulars will remember that this place used to be Auntie's Tea Rooms, which was established in 1983 and run by Yvonne Previtt. So the Senate is run by one of her relatives, with a raft of positive reviews on TripAdvisor. And if you're interested in going for a job there, just pop in with your CV.
Mark Poynton, chef patron of Alimentum in Hills Road, is taking over the White Horse Pub in Eaton Socon by St Neots. It's going to be serving classic simple food in a relaxed family-friendly atmosphere, so not going to be a gastropub, and it is hoped to open on the 5th of July.
That's interesting. Daniel Clifford from Midsummer House did a similar thing with his Flitch of Bacon restaurant, but he was forced to change the approach because so many people went there hoping for a Midsummer House-type meal. So do we know who the chef is going to be?
Yes, it will be Richard Rogerson, who's currently the head chef at Alimentum.
Okay. At Calverley's Brewery on Hooper Street, they've got a range of interesting beers on tap, including the Cherry and Hibiscus Sour, the Pale Ale X Mosaic, and the Citra Pale. And just as importantly, they have got the excellent Joe Herbert. He's back serving infusion doses from now until 3, and again from 6 till 9 tonight. He'll be serving up your choice of the Thai Penang Spiced Chicken and Pineapple Filled Dosa, or the Thai Penang Spiced Tofu and Pineapple Dosa. So there you go, that's a suitable vegetarian one. Some rather unique beers and dosas there, and you may remember that Joe and the Calverley brothers featured on Flavour back in one of our episodes in January. You can find that in our podcasts on the 105 Radio website or any podcast app.
New on the corner of Hills Road and Station Road is Smokeworks, ready and willing to serve up brunches, lunches and dinners. Whilst a few days ago, Novi on Regent Street opened its roof terrace, a new outside spot for summer drinks and the great Novi menu.
And Simon Fraser of Hot Numbers, the coffee house on Guido Street and Trumpington Street, he's about to launch the Hot Numbers Coffee on Cool. See, he's got himself this vintage fire engine, and it's all bedecked out in the Hot Numbers maroon red. And it's going to be on the road this month, and as the flyer says, book today to rescue any function or party from bad coffee. The Hot Numbers fire engine will be at Thirsty Riverside on the 9th of July, and it's got to qualify as the biggest street food, biggest coffee van in Cambridge ever.
Love the sound of it. Cam Events is organising an Azahar Spanish tapas night with wine at Co at 15 Cherry Hinton High Street. It's on June 30th from 7:30 to 10:15 p.m.
There's a sake tasting experience at Sticks and Sushi, the award-winning Danish sushi restaurant in Wheeler Street on Wednesday the 12th of July. You can try six distinct sakes, one of which is specially developed for this event. And sake is fermented Japanese rice wine. It's a little bit like beer in its brewing, where the starch is converted to sugar and that ferments to alcohol. So if that sounds up your street, tickets are available from the Eventbrite website.
And finally, Espresso Library on East Road are now serving dinners from 5 to 9 p.m, Wednesday through to Saturday.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of Flavour. If you've missed bits or if you just want to hear the whole thing again, the podcast will be available early next week. Remember, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.fm or follow us on Twitter @flavour105. And of course, you can follow the station itself @cambridge105.
So, from Matt and myself, thanks very much for listening. And until July 8th, we wish you good health.
Good eating.
And good drinking.
Goodbye.
Bye.